From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 1948 when a man from Puerto Rico came to New York State. He arrived in Rochester on a bus on the way to New York City. But at the bus station, he ran into an old friend who talked about getting a job in Rochester. And so this man stayed here, got a job as a dishwasher in the old Seneca Hotel, and made enough money to eventually send for two of his children to come live here as well. His 9-year-old son at the time, Domingo, would go on to become one of the most prominent leaders in the local Latino community. Domingo Garcia has been many things in his career: an activist, a member of the United States military, one of the founders of Ibero-American Action League, leader of the National Puerto Rican Coalition, director of the Ibero-American Investors Corporation, an urban studies fellow at MIT, a member of the Rochester City School Board, the winner of a number of community recognitions for public service. We could probably do this for a lot longer. You should know that Domingo spoke no English when he arrived in Rochester from Puerto Rico, but he soon knew almost every Hispanic person in the city. There were only 50 Hispanic families in those early days, long before Rochester would become home to tens of thousands of Hispanic citizens. Domingo Garcia became a person everyone knew, and in the late 1960s, he helped put Ibero on the map. Throughout the 1970s, his work spanned a wide range of subjects, housing and public libraries and more, and his activism would focus on, well, conditions in migrant camps, for one, as well as policing in Rochester, based on some of his own experiences. Some of what Garcia told newspaper reporters more than 40 years ago sounds strikingly similar to what activists are saying today. Garcia has the perspective of someone who has been leading demonstrations in the street, but has also worked on the inside, whether in business or policy or government. This week, Domingo Garcia is back in Rochester just for a couple of days as a guest of the Monroe County Legislature, which is issuing a proclamation honoring Garcia's service and activism. And we are happy to welcome Domingo Garcia to Connections. Thank you, sir. Thank you for being with us in studio today, Domingo.
Thank you for the invitation. I'm very honored.
And let me welcome as well. Eugenio Marlin is Executive Vice President of Ibero-American Development Corporation. Eugenio, welcome back. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Julio Vasquez Sr. is with us as well. And Julio serves on a number of boards, Chair of the Board of Trustees at Eugenio Maria de Hostos Charter School, for one. Welcome. Thank you for being here, Julio.
Thank you for having me.
We've got plenty of stories to share with Domingo Garcia, but before we turn the spotlight on the man of the hour here, I want to ask Eugenio and Julio, for listeners who don't know Domingo's story here, I mean, if you were in Rochester in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, you would know Domingo Garcia very well. He lives in Florida now and is back in Rochester this week. But Eugenio, for you, what does this man represent?
Domingo is a visionary. And because of him being a visionary, he kind of charted the growth and development of the Latino community in Rochester, probably without knowing it. But he could see things. Domingo was a straight fighter for rights. I think when he became aware of what justice is, he found ways, and he started opening doors that have never been shut before, given the fact that he also made sure that he mentored people that could carry out his legacy.
Let me ask Julio the same question. What does this mean?
I totally agree with Eugenio. But to me, Domingo is one of my most valuable mentors. I can say without a doubt that everything that I have learned from running the agency to developing programs to being a leader, I learned from him. Actually, I learned from him to have the courage to be a leader. I struggled with that in my early years as a young leader, specifically because I did not have the good command of the English language, and I was terrified to talk publicly and what have you. And he just basically told me once, being afraid doesn't count. You got to go forward. So, I can say without a doubt that, you know, he really taught me how to be a leader.
Julio, if I would have told you in those days that you would be sitting doing radio interviews with public radio, as you've done not for the first time today, would you have believed it?
No. It's hard to believe.
Interviews in English, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. No, I had a hard time with the English language. I came here when I was 13. I didn't know any English at all. And to make it worse, there was no bilingual education program in the city school district. And as a result, we had a hard time competing. And we were classified as slow learner. Well, I was put in a special ed program called school board program, which most Puerto Ricans were in place in that program because they could not compete in the classroom. Mm.
And Eugenio, Julio talks about Domingo's leadership. What to you makes a great leader?
Well, someone who puts others before himself. And someone who, like Julio says, being afraid is not an option, especially in those times when so many doors were not open. And not only did we need to open doors, but we needed to break down some doors too. And it was an uphill battle. But I worked with Domingo, and I was probably 20 when I started working with Domingo. And I listened and I watched him, and I admired the visionary that the city of Rochester had. I think it was a luxury. He saw beyond what other people could. Julio and I went to one of the funding agencies at one point to talk to one of the funders, and he was the president CEO of Ibero, was chair of the board, and we were talking about some of the things that Domingo tried to do. The funder said, and I'm quoting, she said, "The problem with Domingo is that he was always way ahead of us. When any idea that he brought for the betterment of the community, we were not ready." Mm. And that is true, because I had experienced that with Domingo.
Mm. Well, Domingo, you've heard what your colleagues say about you. When you think about the scope of your career, everything that you have done, how do you think of yourself? What's the story you think of first?
I think that you cannot lead from behind. You have to be in front. So you cannot be fearful of leadership. You have to be able to accept it and do the best you can to help the people that you are supporting. It is very difficult to do things by yourself. So I know that I was successful in doing many things because I have people that I believed in, whom I trust, and who trusted me. So I appreciated the fact that I was standing on the shoulders of these people to do what I thought should be done for the Hispanic community in the state of New York and nationally.
Well, and there's a lot we're going to talk about here, but I'm struck by something that Domingo Garcia told newspaper reporters in 1980. You said, Domingo, that you looked forward to a time when Puerto Ricans have a national presence and are not second thoughts in politicians' agendas anymore. Have we come close to seeing that happen?
Locally, we have achieved that goal. Nationally, we still have a long way to go. I believe that in Rochester, we have Puerto Ricans in just about every profession that there can be. My grandson just graduated as an engineer from the university. We didn't have any engineers in Rochester back then, and we had not had any for quite a while, but we have many today. And I am very happy that Rochester has enjoyed political greatness, to my belief, because we have elected city council people, we have run the city councils, we have elected people to the county legislature, and have done many, many other things statewide that we had not been able to do before, and now it's just part of the business, daily business of politics.
Let me ask your colleagues about that. I mean, I was reading this profile of Domingo Garcia, 1980, in the Democrat and Chronicle. And Julio, what do you make of this, you know, 44 years later, his concern in the early 1980s that are Puerto Ricans going to be finally respected more and not considered second thoughts? What do you make of it now in 2024?
We have made a lot of progress. It's, as Domingo mentioned, the consul president is a kid that is a son of Jibaro Puerto Riqueño, which happens to be my wife's brother. I'm so proud of him. And the county legislature president is also another Puerto Rican that from my Puerto Rican parents as well. And the vice president is also one of the from the community as well. So we have made a lot of progress. And if you go back 40 years ago, you didn't know. You know, you were fighting and you're hoping. But, you know, now you see the progress and you feel good. However, we still have a long way to go. We still have a lot of poverty in the city. Our kids still dropping out of school in record numbers. I'm very proud that we were able to start a charter school and it's doing very well. And we're graduating 90% of the kids and they're getting a good education. Unfortunately, it's just 1,000 out of 30,000 other kids. So we still have a long way to go.
Eugenia, what do you think?
I think we have grown a lot. Like Julio says, there's still a lot to do. But Latinos are immersed in every professional life in the area. And when we go to conferences, we always go with the desire to learn something, and once you interact with people from different cities, you find out that in the context of being part of the life, the political life of a community, that Rochester was not that far behind. And I've spoken to people from, you know, New York City, Philadelphia, and so forth.
Chicago.
And we were always had more access to the authorities, to the mayor, to the county executive, to the police department. And when you think about it, that is a product of the work that the earlier leaders did to make sure that injustices that happened in this city were stopped. And if something happened, you know, the people had a voice. So I don't know if it's size or the size of the city, but we have had access to a lot of the things that are happening. And that's all only because of the leaders that were willing to fight and pave that way so that we could be part of the development of our system.
Well, I mentioned earlier that some of the comments that I read that Domingo Garcia had made during periods of activism in his career, especially in regards to police, felt like they could have come from a much more modern time. That's not to say that I'm not leveling any sort of judgment that there's been no progress or some. I mean, that's not for me to decide. But I was struck by some of what Domingo experienced. You did an interview in 1991 with former WXXI president and CEO Bill Pierce for WXXI show at the time that was called The Rochester I Know. It was a talk show with in-depth conversations with Rochester figures who share their thoughts about what Rochester means to them. And in this half-hour conversation, you told our former CEO about an experience in which there was a confrontation. A police officer punched you. You said you punched back. You ended up waking up in jail with bruises all over your body. I think you were charged with resisting arrest. And a lawyer who was in court watching the proceedings stood up and offered to defend you, even though you said, I can't pay you.
Wilmer Barlo.
Yeah, and that lawyer, who has since passed, not only did a great job, the judge threw out the charges against you, and that inspired you to try to do some work to make sure others in that similar situation also had representation. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, well, actually, it was my second bad experiences with police. The first one happened in El Paso, Texas, when I was in the Army. Just a young kid, 17. And the train, the people that were supposed to pick me up at the station never came to pick me up. And I had to just wait there. And I got hungry and thirsty, and I saw a sign that said for a saloon in the distance. And I just picked up my bag and my duffel bag and walked over to the saloon. Went in, saw a sign that says, Niggers, Mexicans, Indians and dogs keep out. And I was so angry, and I just kicked the door open, went to the bar and asked for a beer. Now, at 17, I knew I wasn't supposed to be drinking beer, but I just wanted to make a point. The bartender, who was a very heavy set guy with a beer belly, was talking to two or three of his buddies in the corner, looked at me from the distance, and looked at me again because I insisted, pounded the bottle again and asked for a beer, came over and said, listen, boy, haven't you been able to see the sign? I mean, where is it? Are you blind or something? I said, yeah, I saw the sign. But I'm none of those things. I'm not an Indian, I'm not a Mexican, I'm not a dog. So I want a beer. So what are you then, he says. I'm a Puerto Rican, same. And they proceeded to pick me up. I was in military uniform, by the way. They picked me up by my legs and my arms, threw me out of the bar, and the other guy threw the bag on top of me and went back into the the street wasn't even paved, so I was dusty all over from the sand, and you know they had thrown me in a military uniform.
In your military uniform.
In my military uniform, I was being transferred from Georgia to Fort Huachuca in Arizona, and I went there by train, and it made a stop in El Paso, and the Army people were supposed to pick me up and take me to Fort Huachuca. I had to call Fort Huachuca and asked them to send somebody else because the original people never showed up. The incident here in Rochester with the police happened. The guy's name was Nelson Evans, the policeman who did that. I was struck that 10 years later I found out that Nelson Evans was sent to prison for stealing drugs in the city. He was one of the biggest drug dealers in the area. He was sent to federal prison for being, and the incident happened because I was in the middle of a transaction that they had planned, and I wouldn't move, and he was expecting people to come there and pick up drugs, and I refused to move, because I wasn't doing anything. I was waiting for my friends to come.
And the officer punched you?
He punched me. I expected him to fight back. He didn't. He just got in his car and left, and then I went in with my buddies to the restaurant and Caffarelli's to eat some dinner. Caffarelli came back to the table running and says, the cops are outside, they surrounded the building. And I said, well, I'll go out the back door. He had put me very close to the back door for that real purpose. In case the police came, I can just run out of the back door. But it didn't help because the car stole. And good wouldn't start, and they came around and saw me and grabbed me, and that was the end for me.
And you woke up in jail?
I woke up in the hospital, actually.
In the hospital. You hear our other guests laughing. They've heard these stories from Domingo. Domingo's an amazing storyteller, as you are experiencing right now. I mean, for me, though, this is a hard story to hear because, you know, I don't know what to say. It sounds terrible.
I was still in the military then, by the way. I wasn't in uniform here in Rochester.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But it just so happens that the situations, the two incidents were not that far apart. One was when I was 17, the other one was when I was 18. And I came here for a wedding. And I realized that something was going really bad for us here in Rochester, for Puerto Ricans in Rochester. Back in the 1960s, when the Puerto Rican, before that it was, we used to get along with everybody, no problem. Everybody respected each other. We had Italians and Irish in the neighborhood. We never had any problems with any of them. But when Puerto Ricans attacked Congress with machine guns back in the, when was it, the 60s?
58.
1950.
Yeah. Late 50s. Then things changed. Then the police felt very, prone to just push you around if they saw you on the street. And they would slap you around for no reason at all.
Go ahead, Julio.
Yeah, they felt they had the license to beat you up, yeah. Because you had two incidents. One was in 1950, mm-hmm. where two nationalists came to assassinate the president. And then in 1954, Lolita Lebron with a couple other people tried to, yeah.
And that, after that, we were not, say the streets were not safe for us then. We were harassed periodically by the police. My brother couldn't go to work without being stopped or arrested for nothing, just walking in the wrong neighborhood. And I couldn't understand why the wrong neighborhood was then, because we used to live on Oak Street and the around us were just Italians, you know. We had no other people around. But because he was walking through an Italian neighborhood, he got arrested and thrown in jail until the weekend.
So you did. I know you were moved by not only your experience with the officer, but by the experience of the attorney. What was the attorney's name again?
Wilmer Patlow.
Yeah, Wilmer Patlow. And
he eventually became a Supreme Court justice for the state of New York.
And so I know that inspired some of the work that you did. I want to ask you, when you think about what activists are working through, especially in the last 5 years, how much progress have you seen with police-community relations?
I've seen a lot of progress in the police. Julio's son was a policeman, mm-hmm. and I knew, and he worked in the neighborhood where I did business when I had a liquor store here in Rochester. I have seen a lot of progress. The problem has been that Rochester imported Hispanic policemen from other places and brought them into the city, and those people did not own the neighborhoods. So they didn't have the same
because they don't live in the city. They didn't live in the city.
But they didn't live in the city. They mm-hmm. didn't know the city. They didn't understand. They came from cities much bigger, where the problems were much from New York City, for example, or mm-hmm. other communities like that. Well, the problems were so vast that there wasn't much that they could do. So they brought that mentality to Rochester. The old policemen. Well, they walk in the neighborhood and then felt really safe. They no problem, no issues, you know. But they retired after 20 years. We never having to draw a gun on in Puerto Rico or in the neighborhood. I believe that we can do better recruiting people who are known in the community, who are known in the neighborhoods, who know the neighborhood, who know the people they're going to be dealing with, mm-hmm. rather than meeting people from the outside.
Julio, what do you think?
Well, yes. Back in 1969, and Domingo, obviously, you know, it's part of the story that you have in front of you. We went 1969 at Ibero, we received about 29 complaints from the community that police were beating up these kids at Midtown Plaza. Now, Midtown Plaza was the first time was announced as a plaza for us as Hispanic, especially Puerto Ricans and Dominicans. A plaza is a place to hang out. Yeah, so a lot of our kids decided they were going to hang out there. I mean, this was a place to hang out. Well, according to the business people, they were loitering. So the police was called, and they were beat up, many. So we had to put a demonstration against the police department in 1969. And that's where I met Domingo for the first time in a confrontation with the police. We were told that we were lying. And Domingo got up and pounded the table, and everything flew up and all over the place. And but as a result of that confrontation, a group of people met with the chief, and they assigned a police officer by the name of Joseph Malone.
Joe Malone.
Who was married to Puerto Rican and understood the culture and the language. And he worked with us at Ibero, tried to improve the relationship with the police.
But then the person who started calling us lies was Mark Tui. And Mark Tui was a commissioner of police at the time. And the chief of police was Bill Lombard. I had a good relationship with Bill Lombard because he knew that I had worked with policemen before and without any problems. And when they had problems, I was calling to mediate some of the issues. But Mark Tui, couldn't understand or couldn't accept the fact that policemen were abusing people for no reason whatsoever. And when he called in view that there were a few people in the audience who had been abused, and punches, their faces reflected the action that the police took on them personally. I just couldn't stand that. And I confronted him squarely in a room full of major policemen, people who were in the ranks, captains and lieutenants and what have you. They were officers, the top officers of the police department. It had to be done, you know. I mean, I knew that I had seen about 500 or 600 people sitting in the audience who trusted me not to put them in danger. And I lost my patience, and I did put him in danger. It took me a long time to get over that.
Well, and one other question on this, and then I'm going to bring in a guest on the phone who wants to join us from the Monroe County Legislature. But before I do that, you have said, though, Domingo, that you have seen progress, that it's not perfect, that there are still points of change that have to be made in modern policing, but it is better than it was. When you see activists pushing for change now, I mean, you've been an activist yourself. What do you make of the modern activists and the work that they're doing?
I don't push for change that takes away from resources or takes resources away from the police or the police department. I can't back that up.
You can't back cutting police resources.
No, I can't. I believe that a policeman, like a person who in the military, signs a blank check to the community to ensure that they're taken care of. And that blank check means that the community can do whatever they want with the policeman except kill them, basically. In the military, you know, you go to fight for your country, and they don't care. They send you, you get shut down, they send somebody else to replace you. I think that people and police should work together to make the community safe, and there are ways to do that, and that should be pursued, and resources should be allocated to make those things happen, rather than buying tanks and armored wagons to protect you from people who have no weapons other than rocks and bottles to throw at you.
So it sounds like Domingo agrees with a lot of the efforts of modern activists, but disagrees with the idea of cutting or eliminating police funding or agencies. Okay. Let me bring in a guest on the phone who's the president of the Monroe County Legislature, is Aversia Roman, who is with us now. And it's great to have you, Aversia. Thanks for making time.
Hello. Good afternoon. Thank you so much for having me today.
I asked our guests in studio what they think of when they think about Domingo Garcia, what he represents to this community. What's the answer for you, Aversia?
Oh, in general, I'm really excited to be here and be able to recognize Domingo tonight. And, as in, it's important part of the legislature to recognize the people that have made significant contributions to our community. So with you asking that question in regards to what do I see Domingo as, I really would not be here if it wasn't for standing on the shoulders of community leaders like Domingo. I know you have Eugenio and Julio in the office with you today. I can talk about other community leaders that we've lost recently in community pillars like Iris Bannister or Dr. Alice Holloway. And really, for me, this community and personally, I have been blessed to know a history of trailblazers that have set the path for many of us in the community.
Well, and I know Domingo is certainly one of them. So just briefly, and I do appreciate you on your busy schedule calling in. Aversia, the legislature is issuing, my understanding, a proclamation tonight. Is that right?
Yes, we are issuing a proclamation tonight for Domingo Garcia and all his work that he's done for the community here in Monroe County, being founder of a barrel from its infancy, and the fact that that organization would not be what it is today without him helping to set the foundation for the organization. And I am truly honored and proud to be able to be in the position I am in currently to honor his lifetime of service to our community.
And before we let you go, Aversia, we were getting ready for this program, and so we were kind of digging up articles and interviews that Domingo had done. And, when you go back and read the stories 1980, 1991, in the 1970s, I mean, Domingo Garcia is a titan in this community. And this community has stood on the shoulders of that for a long time. But I admit myself, as a journalist, I had to learn a lot about Domingo before this program began today. And that's one of the reasons we're having this hour, is because we don't want to lose our history by not talking about it, by not sharing it, by not making sure that we honor it. And it strikes me that you feel the same, that in the work that you're doing today, there's a lot of echoes to the work that Domingo did. And yet a lot of the people that you are colleagues with might not know Domingo's story. How important is it to understand our history?
It's vitally important. It's really one of the main reasons why we're putting forth this proclamation. I think it's important for us as a community to recognize our ancestors and recognize the work that has been done before us. I think it's through understanding our history that we are able to pave a better future for our community. And it's also working alongside community members through a multi-generational approach that we really will be able to effectuate change. So I'm glad you have seen and understand the importance of really what I'm trying to do today.
Well, thank you, President Roman, for making the time. We appreciate you popping in here. I know it means a lot to our guests to hear you as well. And we'll talk to you soon. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And thank you for having a guest on today.
You got it. Aversia Roman, president of the Monroe County Legislature. And so, our guest, Domingo Garcia, has received many community service awards over the years. This is another, and I know it means a lot. You came in from Florida. It's got to mean something to you, Domingo. What does this mean to you?
Well, when Peter and Eugenio and Julio asked me to come, I come. When I ask them to do something, they will do it, no problem at all. So I have to reciprocate. They asked me to come, and here I am.
Absolutely. And I want to talk a little bit about Ibero. When Ibero was founded in 68, 69?
68.
Years later, in one of the interviews that Domingo Garcia did, I want to paraphrase some of what Domingo said, but Domingo said that when people hear Ibero in this community, they've known it now for years, and what comes to mind is not a scandal. It's not a problem. It's not an embarrassment. It's ethical, strong, vital work that has helped countless people doing it the right way from day one. And that not every organization can say that. That meant a lot to Domingo, that that has been the story for decades now. Do you still feel that way about Ibero?
The most important thing that you can do to make an organization grow is show that the funds that are allocated or donated to you are used properly and in a way that they were intended to when they were given to you.
Amen.
So I believe that that takes priority. In fact, I hired an accountant simply because she used to be somebody else's accountant and gave me a hard time when I submitted government program invoices to her. She used to give me such a hard time to make sure that I follow the rules that when she became unemployed, I rushed over and immediately hired her on the spot.
That's right. Yeah.
And you gotta be as tough with my staff as you were with me when I went to your office.
That's a great story. And Julio, for you, you worked in late 68, 69, then you were back in Puerto Rico for a couple of years, I think. Then you returned to work with Ibero here, is that right, in 71?
That is correct.
What do you remember most about those days, about those early days of the organization?
Well, it was just a fledgling organization, obviously, in 1968. It had just a few people working. And the founding father, as we called him, Jorge Colon Sr., he set the stage, if you will, of the agency, the stage for service above South, if you can borrow that from the Rotary. But he provided leadership for almost 4 years, and he left on a volunteer basis, by the way. He didn't get paid for that. In 1971, at the end of 1971, he left. And then in the spring of 1972, Domingo became the executive director. He was assistant executive director when I came back from Puerto Rico, and he offered me the program, the community organization project at that time, which was exciting for me. But anyway, for the next decade, the whole decade of the 70s, Domingo spent all the time developing the agency. The agency is what it is today because Domingo Garcia. He made it grow. He made it what it is. And in the mid-80s, we had some leadership problems. There was some crisis. And he was asked to come back in the 88 or something like that, to put reorganize, if you will, which he did. And then I became president and CEO in 1993. And it was easy for me to take over because the agency was in great shape. All I had to do was, if I can use the plant metaphor, all I had to do was water it and perfect it and make sure it grew. But it was him who made it happen. And we are grateful to him. And I worked the whole decade of the 70s with him, and then I left and became an entrepreneur and went on to get a master's degree in education later on and thought about teaching for the rest of my life. But then in 1993, I was recruited to become the president and CEO of the league.
It's a remarkable story. And Eugenio, you think about those early fledgling days, just a few people. How big is Ibero now?
Huge. I think let me put it in context, right? And following up with what Julio said, the agency is founded you know, with Jorge Colon and the rest of the group. And then when Domingo came to the agency, he stood it up, made it into an institution. And as he said, integrity that I saw when I connected with Iberian 72, the integrity that I saw with Domingo and Ibero remains still, even when we had some crisis at some time. The integrity, the respect that that was developed through by Domingo remained, and that's part of it. Now, once you, and I keep on using the word visionary, because not only was he able to keep the agency standing, but he had a vision where he wanted the agency to go, and that vision always involved the community. It was, you know, we have to do this, you know, and Ibero has done a lot. For example, Ibero had a credit union back in the 70s. Right. We had a credit union, we had an arts and cultural center, and we had a food cooperative, and on and on and on, and that was all because Domingo was able to see beyond, you know, his arms. You know, he could see what we could be, and he did that, and Ibero has gone through from Domingo with a vision and strength to somebody like Julio, who, you know, is a go-getter. He's, you know, you just get it done. And then you pass the baton to the new generation, and you get somebody like Angelica. Angelica is something else. But I'm going to call on Angelica the head of Ibero 2.0, because she has picked up. In order to run something like Ibero, you first need to have the integrity. You need to buy into the mission. That's the number one prerequisite. Buy into the mission. Once you do that, the mechanics you can learn from any one of us. But if you really embrace that mission, then you can go places. And I think we are at Ibero at that stage now.
You're hearing Eugenia Marlene, Executive Vice President of the Ibero American Development Corporation. Julio Vazquez Sr. is joining us, talking about not only his time at Ibero, but the work that he has done alongside our guest of honor this hour, Domingo Garcia, who is back in Rochester for one more day. He's going to be honored by the Monroe County Legislature tonight for his service in this community for decades. And if you didn't know Domingo Garcia, that's why we're doing this conversation today. If you are a prominent Rochesterian, of course you know Domingo Garcia. But as time goes on, sometimes we lose sight of our history, and we want to make sure that we don't lose sight of our history. Someone who's going to help us with that is Willa Powell, who is on line one, former member of the Rochester City School Board. Hello, Willa.
Hi, Evan. How are you?
Very good.
Good. So I asked your screener if anyone had mentioned his service on the school board yet, and he didn't think so. So I thought.
I mean, we're trying to get through it all. It's a long resume, Willa.
but his service on the school board is certainly not insignificant, and I would argue that the time that he served on the school board was part of the most stable, non-controversial period. And that's because Domingo brought expert professionalism to the table, and that was recognized and honored, especially through his presidency. And I couldn't be more grateful and pleased to be able to say that in Domingo's hearing. He's a giant and a role model for me. And I love you, Domingo.
Thank you. I love you too.
Willa, thank you. First of all, what a beautiful recollection. And Willa is certainly right, Domingo. I mean, your work on the school board is significant too. I didn't mean to gloss over that. So, in the the couple decades since your service, it has not always been a very smooth set of relationships in the board. Does that trouble you?
Yes, it bothers me a lot, as a matter of fact, because you're taking away resources that the school system needs. And when you get people involved in things that really don't matter that much, it's just personality clashes. The school board should concentrate on what the job is, and that is doing, setting the policies that are required to have the education be successful and efficient for the students in the district. That's not happening, I think, now. From what I read from Florida, I stay in touch with the local mm-hmm. newspapers. I don't like what's going on, and I think something has to be done about it. People should be voted out, and other people should be voted in, quite frankly. That's what I believe in.
People who can be
more effective and efficient and do what it's supposed to do instead of haggling about personalities and things that are not that critical.
Well, I understand that viewpoint entirely, but let me ask you a separate question then. Everybody who has weighed in on your career, wherever they've worked with you, has talked about your professionalism, your leadership. You know, Willa is talking about how truly collegial and how effective you were on the board because you didn't get caught up in the personal and the anger, et cetera. And yet, your life and your career seems like it could have gone in a very different direction. Yes. You came here at the age of 9. You didn't speak any English. You dealt with discrimination. You literally dealt with police brutality. Didn't graduate high school. You go to the military. And you came back. You had to deal with so much in your own life that I think seems like it could have put you on a different path. Why did you become someone who is capable of trying to set aside personal disputes and focus on what a community needs when it is so easy to get caught up in what makes you angry or feel aggrieved?
I believe that to be efficient and successful in doing whatever it is that you choose to do, if you are capable of being really angry, of great anger, you should also be capable of being a supreme pacifist. You know, you're capable of either one or the other. The fact is that originally I intended to be an electrician until I found out I was colorblind. When I came out of the service in 1961, I wanted to be an electrician, and I signed up to take the examinations to become an apprentice. And I passed the exams, you know, because it was nothing technical. It was just general knowledge. I passed the exams, but I was not selected to be an apprentice. And everybody else in the group that was white was selected, but all of us, or those who were minority, were not selected. And that really became a point of contention for me. And I decided that I had to change that somehow. I couldn't do anything about the unions, but I made sure that the unions knew who I was and what I was doing in the community. Because since problems came that dealt with the unions in the hotels and the restaurants, I knew that most of the people working in the kitchen were Hispanic, and that I was able to influence them one way or the other. And I told John Little, who was the president of the restaurant union back then, if you don't make sure that your employees are earning a decent wage and are part of the union in a significant manner, then we're going to dissolve this union. Basically, we're just going to get rid of it because most of your people are Hispanic in the city, at least in the city of Rochester. I really believe that what leads you to do something is something that you believe should have not happened. My being beaten up in the street, my people beating me up in the army when I was in El Paso, that sent a message to me. And I didn't want anybody else to have to go through that. I knew that it's impossible to erase it totally, but I was going to do my best to try to at least ameliorate it.
You've done amazing work in your career. And I just want to thank you for making the time to come in and tell the story that I hope for many of our listeners, if they are not familiar or maybe, you know, haven't heard the name Domingo Garcia in some time, now that you understand this really significant pillar in our community. Thank you for the work you've done. Thank you for sharing your story. Congratulations on the proclamation coming your way tonight from the Monroe County Legislature. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you for the invitation.
Domingo Garcia, Eugenio Marlene, Executive Vice President of Ibero-American Development Corporation. I know I'll see you soon, sir. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you for inviting me.
And great to have you. And great to have Julio Vasquez Sr. Sir, an honor. Thank you for coming in as well.
Thank you.
We've got more connections coming up in just a moment.